Hello and welcome to the December 2011 edition of The President's Perspective. It's a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. As we wrap up this calendar year, we want to take a moment to revisit our discussion about the guiding principles of the university. Today's topic is going to be service, and later we may talk Jones family holiday celebrations. But first, let's talk about an important role that Dr. Jones shares with our guest in planning out the future of transportation in and throughout Hunt County. Dr. Jones, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Jared, and we are going to start out with a very important topic, and that is transportation planning here in Hunt County. There's a project that's been going on now for over a year to develop a comprehensive transportation plan for the county. And I've learned a lot about, not just about transportation, but about Hunt County. And this will be the county's first comprehensive transportation plan. It's kind of interesting. One of the things I learned is that Hunt County was incorporated in 1846. And in all that time, we have not had a comprehensive transportation plan. We've built roads. We've had interstate highways go through the county and so forth. But this will be the first venture into a comprehensive planning exercise. And our guest for this segment is my friend Dee Hilton. Dee is a businessman and civic leader in Greenville. So, Dee, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Dee and I co-chair the Hunt County Transportation Planning Committee. And as I said, this project has been going on for a little over a year now. And, Dee, let me just ask you, can you provide a little bit of background as to how this project got started and the context for the project?
The project was started really once Hunt County joined the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And that is an organization that is part of the North Central Texas Council of Governments, which is headquartered in Arlington and includes 12 counties in the Metroplex, including Dallas and Tarrant County and Collin County and Denton County, which real high growth, high population areas. North Central Texas Council of Governments has responsibility for various kinds of planning, including transportation, and has a division called the Regional Transportation Commission, RTC, which actually oversees the spending of federal funds that flow into now this 12-county area. Mm-hmm. So once Hunt County joined the Metropolitan Planning Organization, one of the first things that was requested was that we have a comprehensive transportation plan. That was a request from local people in
right.
Hunt County, but the North Texas COG was more than willing to support that effort, and they've done so over this last year using their staff to do this. I think if you and I were doing this, we'd probably still be out doing some research.
So. Oh, yeah, for a long time.
But these people are professionals. They've done it for many of the counties in the 12-county area, and I'm real excited about the plan that we're going to have.
Hunt County came into the Metropolitan Planning Organization, as I recall, in October of 2009. Is that correct?
I believe that's right.
About a little over 2 years ago. So we're now officially part of the Metroplex, Jared. I know we've kind of felt like we're in one of the outer planetary orbits, but...
It's good to be anchored in that direction, I
right.
think, because there's a lot of population in that direction, but, too, I guess there's a lot of example to draw from.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think one of the main things is the fact that that's where the growth is taking place.
Exactly.
To our west, and contiguous to Hunt County, the growth is taking place in Rockwall, Dallas, Collin. And it's going to spill over. And I think the choice that we have is, do we want to be ready for the growth, or do we just want to let it come and then scramble at the last minute to try to provide transportation venues for
right.
people to circulate and move back and forth. And that growth will move east. And for people in Hopkins County and Delta County and others, as it comes out of and through Hunt County, it'll move on to the east and to the north.
And the growth is inevitable. I guess the timing is the question. But as Dee just said, it's important to be ready for it. We're either going to be ready or we're going to get run over by it. And,
and
transportation infrastructure is really key to so many other things. And let me just amplify a little bit on something that Dee said about the assistance that Hunt County is getting from the North Central Texas Council of Governments. When you talk about the North Central or any Council of Governments, you know, those are kind of under the radar organizations. You know, they're not in the newspaper all that often, but I've been very impressed with the scope of their staff and the depth of their expertise. I mean, it's a pretty amazing group of people that works on these kinds of issues. And they have brought that expertise to bear here in Hunt County. Dee, could you tell us a little bit about, we do have a draft plan now, which we're reviewing. Could you talk a little bit about the different pieces of the plan? Of course, when we talk about transportation, everybody thinks of highways, and of course, that's part of it, but there's a lot more to it as well.
That's correct. The effort really has been centered around combination of roads, rail, pedestrian, and bikes, mm-hmm. primarily. And rail, which from a passenger standpoint is probably many, many years in the future, but now's the time to plan for it, because if you don't reserve rail while it currently exists, you'll never be able to get it back,
right,
because
right.
getting the right-of-way to build rail would be very difficult, particularly in a developing urban-type environment. So it's really important to preserve the rail and begin to plan for that, as well as the continuation of good freight, hauling goods and things into the area, through the area. We've looked probably most at roads, and there's multiple layers of that. They're the major roads that you referenced, mm-hmm. the U.S. and state highways, as well as the Interstate 30. One of the most important things then are the connector roads that connect to those and move people from the various communities in Hunt County to the other communities and other towns, as well as to the major thoroughfare-type roads. This plan in and of itself is not doing a lot of planning within cities, mm-hmm. Other than as the major thoroughfares traverse those cities. But that will be one section. As I mentioned, the rail will be another section, and then pedestrian and bike circulation will be third section. And I know that the University and Commerce mm-hmm. have worked together to try to affect better circulation within the City of Commerce,
right,
so that students are not bound to the campus, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so that's exciting. In the Greenville area, there are several things underway, initiatives underway to try to look at bike lanes and take some abandoned rail right away even and, mm-hmm. and make some bike trails, much like the Katy Trail has been done over in the over in Dallas. So that's exciting, because it's, you know, we'd all love to see the campus have, a little bit of a New England feel.
Right.
People
right.
kind of, you know, could walk from the campus downtown or
sure.
or wherever, and we'd like to create that in anywhere in the county that we could. So that's a major part of it, as well as just roads and streets and potentially rail.
Mm-hmm.
And I might mention, you know, I mean, I hope I live long enough to see it, but I'd love to see people be able to get on the train in Commerce or Greenville and go to DFW Airport.
Oh, wouldn't that be, that'd be tremendous.
Yeah, with some frequency by rail. And for those who have traveled by rail, it's a great way to travel if there's enough frequency. And you sure make better use of your time generally
sure.
than you do driving. So that's a great opportunity that is certainly included in the plan.
I'm picturing this giant map the size of a building with intricate, you know, little lines going. Is mm-hmm. this, I mean, I know that that you guys both, you've got to these books that are so very thick.
Yeah.
But are these giant maps folded up into this book? I mean, this, it seems like this is what it would be predominantly, is looking at these maps and drawing the new line and saying this is where this trail is going to be for transportation, whether it's rail or bike trail or whatever it happens to be.
Well, and that is a big part of the process. And it's not just one map. In fact, I haven't counted, but there's many, many maps included in the draft study, and each one shows something different. We went through an exercise during this process where we, you know, stuck dots on a map, and the color of the dot indicated like a trouble spot or a place of concern, right. congestion, or I know there are maps in here that show incidents and a frequency of
accidents.
Right. And then there are maps that show proposed, you know, concepts. There are three different concepts that might guide transportation planning. So it's a very, very detailed process.
One of the things you have to do is, you know, Hunt County is like most rural counties, has a lot of country roads or
right.
county
sure.
roads, as we call them, that are maintained by the county. Those roads provide right-of-way, or at least part of the right-of-way, that might be needed in the event that that particular area needed improved transportation.
Sure.
So a lot of the planning that has gone into this has been to look at some of those existing right-of-way areas and how they might be expanded to take care of future growth.
Mm-hmm. Hunt County has a lot to work with. We were talking about rail a minute ago, and there's a lot of railroad right of way in this county. It's not all in very good shape, and some of it is underutilized or not utilized, but that's an asset that can be leveraged as we move forward with the plan.
I thought that was unique that he said, you know, a rail being used in the far, far future, and I said, no, it was used in the far, far past,
yeah.
too, I believe. It's kind of coming back around. Well,
yeah, I can remember as a boy, because I'm from Greenville, but riding the train from Greenville to Waco and on right. to San Antonio.
Yeah.
And or seeing my parents get on the train and go to Chicago
mm-hmm.
from Greenville.
Right.
And that obviously is not a possibility right now. But we've got a plan for that, and I hope that one day that's something that we'll see.
So, Jared, as you can see, this is a long-term project, a very important project in terms of charting out the future of all of Hunt County.
Dee, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I might just mention that as part of this, we are going to have public meetings
yes.
In January. And we'll probably have one in Greenville and one in Commerce. I think we're looking tentatively at the 17th of January for the meeting in Greenville and sometime about a week or so later for the one in Commerce. So we'd love to have participation.
Right. As soon as those dates are set, we'll make sure they're posted on the KETR website.
That's absolutely right. Dee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
When we come back, we'll talk service as a university guiding principle. You're listening to The President's Perspective, only on your station, 88.9 KETR. We know there are many worthwhile organizations deserving of your financial support this time of year and are grateful that you would consider KETR. Listener support makes the music, news, sports, and talk on your station possible. It's easy to make your gift online at ketr.org/support, and thank you for your contribution. Welcome back to The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. We continue our discussion now of the university's guiding principles, of which there are seven. So far on this program, we've discussed diversity, student success, and stewardship. You can find those discussions by visiting the show archives at ketr.org. Today, we discuss service.
Yeah, Jared, service is, as you said, one of our seven guiding principles. And as we publish it in our strategic plan, we define service as promoting excellence in service to members of all internal and external communities. Well, it's kind of a circular definition. You know, when any time you include the term in the definition, you're struggling a little
sure.
bit. And service is, we talk about it, it's kind of like Mark Twain and the weather, you know. We talk about it all the time, but what do we really do about it? And it really is, it's a very common term, it's a very common principle, but what does it really mean? And how do you kind of operationalize it in the life of the university?
Right.
And I think that's what we're trying to get to when we talk about service. One starting point is, and a fairly simple and easy starting point, is to think of service as having a pretty compelling moral dimension. I'm not familiar with all of the world religions, but I don't know a one that doesn't promote service to humanity
right.
as a central guiding precept.
Right.
I don't know a single one that promotes selfishness.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, sure.
So service is a pretty universally agreed upon moral principle, you know, giving yourself to help others. And if we took it no further than that, I think it'd be worthwhile as a guiding principle, not only for a university, but for humanity. Another dimension to service is to be found in the discovery by business that good service makes good business sense. If you look at virtually any successful corporation in America or in the world today, a key element of its success will be tied to the quality of its service to customers.
Right. This would be the first thing that I'd think of when we talk about service. And to think that service goes beyond customer service would be a shock to someone like me who,
right.
if I put so much stock in interacting with customers, you know, being able to make sure the experience that somebody might get from an institution or from a corporation is as good as possible.
Right.
In the mind of that customer from start to finish, whether it's seeking out a product or service to, you know, making sure that product or service meets the standard of the customer to following through and making sure that the customer continues to be satisfied with
exactly.
the product or service.
You know, as consumers, I mean, you and I can offer any number of examples of choosing a particular business to patronize because of the quality of its service.
Almost exclusively because of the customer service.
And we will pay extra for that.
Sure.
You know, I mean, obviously price is important, but we'll pay extra for someone to be there on the telephone when you call with a problem.
Right, to feel like you're taken care of.
You know, that's a sound business principle. And, you know, let's face it, universities do exist in a business environment. They do function according to business principles. And in the marketplace of higher education, service has to be a critical piece of what we pursue in terms of trying to promote excellence in service. That's an important dimension as well. It just makes good business sense to promote high-quality service. But I think it's also important to recognize a third dimension to service, which goes beyond just strict business practices. Because let's face it, you know, if you look at the model of American corporate success, it is at most a few centuries old.
Sure.
Because America is at most a few centuries old. And the American business practices, you know, have evolved in quite recent history. Universities are based on ancient models. That's where the university as business model tends to break down.
Right.
Because, yeah, we are businesses. Yeah, we do have to observe sound business practices. Service is part of that. But there's something ancient about what we do here, something enduring that spans not just centuries, but millennia.
Right, so, and it goes beyond the current marketing practices and things like that.
Exactly. Right. And in my mind, that third dimension of service is the most critical piece to keep in mind when we're talking about universities, and that is that service is a critical component of learning. As stewards of an institution which exists for the creation and dissemination of knowledge, that's our mission, that's right. Our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
If we are not mindful of service, then we are abandoning our mission, or at least we are not doing all we can to pursue our mission. Now, let me unpack that briefly and try to get at what we're talking about. How can service be a form of learning? How can it be so critical to learning? One model of teaching is what's called, somewhat disparagingly, the sage on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you get a faculty member with a bunch of advanced degrees and an expert in a field. And you put them up on a stage and they talk for 50 minutes or 90 minutes or whatever it is. And students sort of mindlessly scribble down some notes. And then at the end of 4 or 5 months, they take a test to see how much they've learned.
Right.
That basically puts the entire burden of learning on the student.
Sure. Whatever they can gather and garner is what they can walk away with.
It's sink or swim learning.
Sure.
And the faculty member, the instructor, simply comes in 2 or 3 times a week and spouts off. All right. Well, you know, I'm talking in simplistic terms here, and I'm using caricatures. But the point is that that may be teaching, but that's not learning. Now, what happens to that dynamic when you add in the component of service? When you stir service into the teaching-learning dynamic, what you come up with is a model in which knowledge is a joint enterprise where the instructor, the faculty member, is not just the source of the knowledge, but the individual who helps the student acquire that knowledge, process that knowledge, do something, make it meaningful.
Sure, put it into practice.
So in this paradigm, service is really that catalyst which helps the student incorporate knowledge into his or her own life through interactions with the instructor,
sure.
The faculty member.
Doesn't this, in essence, make service the key component that makes institutional learning a step beyond Wikipedia learning
exactly.
or Google learning? Or you can go, and the knowledge already exists, as we've discussed many times before. Everything that can be known, the degree
is available.
To which it's already out there. The degree to which it's true is obviously for debate. But the point is, everything that is known in the known universe has been published
right.
on the internet, and a person could, in theory, go to the internet and learn everything that a person with multiple PhDs knows. But it's that follow-through, turning it into a pragmatic knowledge, that makes, I think, the institution more valuable than, obviously, a Google search on
right.
whatever topic it is that you'd like to become an expert in.
Yeah, universities are more than just big repositories of information. They are places where knowledge is incorporated into life, and that's where the element of service becomes critical. It's me as a faculty member asking you as a student, here's what I have to share. Does it make sense to you? First of all, let me ask you, does it make sense to you? Does it apply to your circumstances?
Sure.
How can you use this? Show me how you can use this. You know, so it's kind of a dialectical interaction where every premise leads to another premise and so forth in a series of experiments and validations and proofs and all that. I'm making this a lot more complicated than it really is. But the point is that it's that spirit of service infused into the teaching-learning dynamic that makes an institution special.
It's the institution that takes 2 + 2 = 4 and turns it into, if you have 2 apples,
yeah,
and somebody gives you 2 more apples, it takes it from the knowledge to practice.
And then, okay, now that you got 4 apples, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah,
are you going to sell them? Or are you going to, you know, bake a pie?
Right.
Are you going to, you know, give them to the food bank? You know?
So it's, like you said, it's the back end to the knowledge.
Right. So service, really, when we talk about it in that deep sense, service means shared effort in pursuit of mission. And our mission is
creation
and dissemination of knowledge.
I think that as we discuss more of the guiding principles, I feel like we're giving them quite a treatment. When you talk about all of the guiding principles having been the collaborative effort in the beginning and have been part of the method by which to live out the mission of the university,
right.
I think that this is great archival material as well.
Well, I hope so. I like to think of these as living principles. When we talk about servers and stewardship, yeah, I mean, these sound like, you know, things you engrave on a plaque and hang on the wall.
Sure.
But the purpose really is to stimulate interaction and discussion and debate and get people thinking about, okay, what does service mean in my job? What does excellence in service mean? If I'm the registrar, if I am in financial aid, if I am a faculty member in the sociology department, that's where the vital life of the university is lived out, in those conversations and debates.
Well, we've got to shift gears. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Would you like to talk quickly about holiday plans at the Jones House?
Well, yeah. The holiday season, of course, is in full force. Thanksgiving is behind us. We had quite a celebration. We actually had enough guests at the president's house to occupy every bedroom, which is the first time since we've lived there that's happened.
There's always been an empty room until now.
Always been at least one empty room until now. So, but we really had quite a celebration. We had our family up here from Houston, and the weather was perfect, and the food was great, and the fellowship was wonderful. So it was a wonderful way to sort of kick off this month of celebration that we're in now. It seems like December is always such a busy month leading up to the holidays because we've got, you know, we're closing out a semester, we're preparing for the next semester, we have final exams, we've got commencement coming up. My business travel schedule is pretty busy this month as
sure.
well. The great joy is that at some point on some given day, we turn out the lights, we lock the door, and we go home, and it's just sort of like there's this vast sense of relief and joy because everyone comes together in a celebration of, you know, love and fellow feeling and possibility.
Right.
You know, and that's the wonderful thing. We'll be going to Houston for part of the holidays. We don't have the dates completely nailed down yet, but it's always a lot of fun.
Well, as we've been through Christmas 2 years, certainly there is already archived material that talks about the Jones family tradition. So
yeah, right.
Certainly our listeners now are familiar with the visits to Houston every year.
Yeah, and the 15-hour gift openings.
Exactly. And, all the wrapping paper and this one shoe at a time.
One shoe at a time, right. Oh, look, here's an earring in this box. What? You think there might be another one in another box?
We've got to go until we find out.
Yeah, yeah? Right.
Well, this has been the December 2011 edition of The President's Perspective. We thank our guest, Dee Hilton. The President's Perspective can be heard on the first Wednesday of each month at noon and again at 5 p.m., and past episodes are archived online at the new KETR.org. And KETR is a free and universal broadcast service of Texas A&M University Commerce. Let's do this again next year.
Looking forward to it, Jared. Hope you all have a happy holiday.
Well, thank you so much. This is The President's Perspective on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.